This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caroline.
And welcome back to part two of our holiday feast. We're talking about food and food culture because 'tis the season to gorge yourself on whatever you want. There are always those articles, Caroline, about like how to enjoy yourself during the holidays and not gain 10 pounds. And it's like portion control. And you know what I say to that? It's the holidays. You eat all the figgy pudding that you want. And call me in 3 weeks when I can't fit into my pants. But in the last episode, Feast Part 1, we asked whether or not food is the new sex, and we divulged how much we think about food, Caroline and I, which is a lot.
All the time.
But even though you and I are mild food obsessives, would you go as far as to call yourself a foodie?
I would not. I actually dated someone who was so pleasantly surprised that I was open to eating stuff beyond hamburgers, I guess, that he called me a foodie. But I kind of actually recoiled at the description, which I think is funny because if you read articles about foodies, like, it's very controversial. People hate them. But then they're considered snobs, food snobs. And people actually recoil from the foodie label the way that others recoil from the hipster label or the indie rock label or stuff like that.
They're definitely gastronomical hipsters, where a hipster, in the same way, a hipster never wants to self-label as a hipster because that would be unhip. Mm-hmm. A foodie, although I don't know, I do know some foodies will say, I mean, I'm a bit of a foodie. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Backing up with food culture, can we just for a moment take in how, like, foodtainment, food entertainment has just blown up? We have things like food documentaries like Super Size Me, Food Inc., special food issues of mainstream magazines are all over the place now, celebrity chefs and food reality TV, entire networks devoted solely to food. The fact that we have on those food networks specials just about people making desserts, chocolate, just chocolate shows. The popularity of food titles. There was at one point, I want to say, Nigella Lawson, that's her name, right? Her book was outselling 50 Shades of Grey because you know what? People can have sex, but we really want food more than that. We want to look at pictures of food all the time.
And what would you call those pictures of food nowadays?
I would call it food pornography.
That's right. That is the term. And that's a lot of what we will be talking about today. Because, you know, you mentioned the whole, like, food culture that's arisen and how we have all these shows and networks and movies dedicated to it. The Food Network, like, I can't even watch it because I just get so hungry.
Yeah.
It makes me so sad.
Yeah. But we're going to get into the science of why all of that food on that you're watching on the television makes you hungry in your brain. But may we first take a little etymological side trip into, like, when we started using these terms like foodie and food porn, because the history is actually longer than I assumed that it would be.
Yeah, what is it?
Well, check this out. Foodie shows up in the Oxford English Dictionary for the first time in 1980 in reference to salivating patrons of a Parisian restaurant, and it was predated by the term foodist in the late 19th century.
So that sounds like you're against certain foods.
A foodist?
You're a foodist.
Yeah. And then gastroporn pops up in the New York Review of Books in 1977 in an article by Andrew Cockburn that was talking about the sensuous language of cooking instructions. Whereas, you know, if you open up The Joy of Cooking, that is not a food porn recipe book.
Too many words.
At all. Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, I really enjoyed being in the kitchen, and my mom always cooked from The Joy of Cooking. She loved it. But we had this Better Homes and Gardens cookbook from probably the like 60s or 70s, and it had like Technicolor photographs of all these cakes and casseroles, and I always wanted to cook from that one. I thought the recipes were inherently better than Joy of Cooking, which just looked so boring. Call me a foodist. But then in 1984, food porn is thought to have been coined by Rosalind Coward in her book Female Desire, when she's talking about how, you know, women are, because of patriarchal gender roles, have to stay in the kitchen and fulfill their sexual, you know,
role.
Expectations,
yeah.
through cooking as well.
Yeah, she said it's an act of servitude.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that could be a whole podcast on its own, cooking and gender and feminism and stuff. We won't go there.
And even beyond food porn, we still keep coming up with more specific words to describe these food cultures that are coming up, such as in 2007, locavore was named the word of the year by the New Oxford American Dictionary. We love to talk about what we eat, how we eat. We take Instagram pictures of, you know, dumplings and seaweed salads. I'm just now thinking of food. And speaking of Instagram, I would say that the internet and social media in particular has fed the rise of foodie culture, because think about just going on to Pinterest. It is a smorgasbord. Yes, I'm getting in as many food puns as possible. It is a smorgasbord of food porn. It's like the Playboy of food porn, that Pinterest.
Well, yeah, these food pictures are very popular. This isn't a Women's Health article from October 2012. Lots of food sites, just like you talked about how you didn't want to cook from The Joy of Cooking. You wanted to cook from Better Homes and Gardens with all the pictures in it.
Yeah.
Side note, my mother has about 7,000 of those books. She has begged my father to stop giving them to her. Anyway, they say that lots of food sites have diverged from being recipe-driven and instead feature these panned-in shots of glistening foods. You're talking about Instagram and stuff. Food images are the fastest-growing category on Pinterest. Flickr's food porn group alone has nearly 600,000 images. And marketing firm 360i found that pictures of desserts, if you're curious, are the most likely to be shared online. So I think it's interesting to ask, what the heck are all these food images doing to us?
Well, I think that maybe the logic goes that it's fine if we're just looking, especially for something like desserts, which we know, you know, on the food pyramid, that I guess the food pyramid is now
it's a
relic of a bygone era. On the food plate, you know, the part for desserts, it's like, I don't even think desserts on the new food plate, because it's not good for us, obviously. So we can look, but we can't touch, right? So it's fine. We're just going to stare at all those cinnamon buns, and it's not going to have a negative effect on our eating habits, right? Because we're not actually eating it. Tell me that's right, Caroline.
That's not right.
Oh, gosh.
Well, for most of us, it's not right. I know it's not right for me. Like, I actively have to avoid Food Network because I look at that TV show or the whole network, and I'm just like, but I want all of it. And then I overeat chips, and it's just not satisfying. And so then I seek out brownies, and it's a cycle of depression.
That's why I'm going to start a cooking show called The Kale Show.
Okay. I'll see what inventive things you can come up with kale.
Kale chips are incredible. Don't get me started on kale. I'm serious. Yeah. It is a cornerstone of my diet.
Well, that Women's Health article pointed out that these photos and shows and, you know, whatever you're looking at actually provoke real emotional and physical hunger that can be tough to control. That's coming from neuroscientist Laura Martin. And she also pointed out that those who are overweight actually appear to be more sensitive to the effect of viewing all of that irresistible food on TV or in magazines.
Which might go back to, like, brain chemistry that we've talked about before in our podcast on hormones and obesity. And there does seem to be something that will tripwire that. And it probably also has to do with how food porn exploits humans' innate, quote-unquote, supernormal stimuli, which essentially means we are hardwired to want food and especially fatty food. So in a way, that food porn is really delicious to our brain.
Our brain mouth.
Yes.
Ugh.
Because back in the day, and we mentioned this in Feast Part 1, that back in our evolutionary forefathers, forehumans, food was scarce. Mm-hmm. And so we not only were hardwired to see food and want that food, but also the food that would give us the most energy. So unfortunately today, it would be something like lasagna dripping with cheese and... Yeah. Cheese.
That's all we want is cheese. Yeah, there have actually been a lot of studies on this effect, the effect of viewing food porn, basically. In the Journal of Neuroscience back in April 2012, they found that viewing images of that delicious food lit up our brain's reward center and caused women with the most active mental response to overeat. Similarly, in obesity, they found that simply seeing food increases levels of ghrelin, which is the hunger hormone, which is what Kristen was talking about.
But there is a bit of good news to all of this food porn obsession, and that is if we see the food porn and then we, you know, if we're on Pinterest, say, we click on that food porn and land on the recipe and cook that recipe, unless, of course, it is for something like a chocolate volcano deep fried with bacon. if we cook for ourselves and are stimulated by a food porn to do that, then we do have a better chance of eating better. It's more like don't stare. If you're looking at a lot of food porn, then eating a lot of processed food or going out to eat, then you might be in for it.
Rebecca Orchant over at the Huffington Post in October 2012 actually argues that this whole food porn being damaging is baseless. She thinks it's crazy. And this comes after a Dr. Oz show where he talked about the effects of viewing food images and the concerns, the health issues, things like that. But Orchant argues that, double argue here. She says, arguing that food porn makes you fat is akin to arguing that regular porn makes you a sex addict. It's not only incorrect, it's pretty irresponsible.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I think that some of the fears around food porn, I mean, even the fact that we call it food porn, are overblown. But still, though, just going on to social media networks, onto logging onto Facebook, getting on Instagram, Pinterest, and seeing how obsessively people, and especially young people too, document what they are eating at restaurants and what they are making at home, because usually it'll be something kind of impressive, or at least like that looks incredibly delicious. Like if it's a sandwich, it's not going to be a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It's going to be like, you know, whatever goes into an incredible sandwich.
Something multi-layered, maybe with sprouts.
Something involving prosciutto. But it seems to be some kind of new marker for how, like, food cultured you are. Oh, look, this image, oh, this is of this little Vietnamese place. Like, you've probably never heard of it.
Yeah, kind of you, a thing. You wouldn't have heard of it.
Yeah, it's a strange, like, I do think there's an argument to be made of how food is a new sort of cultural status symbol.
Yeah, there is the argument that food is replacing art. Well, I mean, there have been all the arguments. Food is the new sex. Food is the new art. Food is the new indie rock music.
Right.
All of these things. But the food replacing art argument gets a lot of play over at New York Times. This is William Derasiewicz, who in October 2012 wrote an impassioned opinion piece about food and art. He basically says that we are in danger. This is a quote. We are in danger of confusing our palates with our souls, Kristen.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, because food, he says, food is not art, people. We both start by addressing the senses. So good food, good art, you're addressing the senses. But food doesn't express emotion. It doesn't give you insight into other people. It doesn't help you see the world in a new way or force you to take an inventory of your soul.
Yeah, he goes on to say that we are now reading the gospel according to not Joyce or Proust, but to Michael Pollan and Alice Waters. And, like, totally understand what he says, but it's like these broad brush claims that food is replacing everything. Food is the new sex, like you said. Food is the new art. But food is simply, I feel like a lot of this foodie culture is coming out of, like, the accessibility of food, and not just any old food, but good food, to where there's so much available that, yes, it is a marker of taste if you can sift through that and find and choose the quote-unquote better stuff. Obviously, like art, different people have different tastes, and there's also the thing of, you know, accessibility of, you know, can you go out and afford to eat at Alice Waters restaurant, or can you go out and afford to buy a Jackson Pollock, in which case, like, yes, I realize those tabs would be much larger, but still.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can go to access really not only excellent but unusual food doesn't mean you have to go to a fancy restaurant. You can be a foodie and do all of your shopping, cooking, and eating from the farmer's market.
Well, and I feel like that's part of it, too. Like, that part of the foodie culture is sort of in the same way of, I think maybe asking, is food the new, like, hipsterdom is even more accurate, because there's that pleasure in finding the lowbrow and the stuff, like, you don't have to go, like, mainstream to find, like, amazing food. Like, you can just go to, like, a food truck.
I know. Like your hipster voice.
Yeah.
Your foodie hipster voice. Well, one of those foodie articles that got people talking about, no, this is great that young people are exposed to good food, or these people are ridiculous, was a New York Magazine article in March 2012, where the writer points out that it really is kind of a generational thing. He says that food itself has become a defining obsession among a lot of young people. It's now viewed, he says, as a legitimate option for a hobby, a topic of endless discussion, a playground for one-upmanship, a measuring stick of cool.
Yeah, the New York Magazine writer follows around Diane Chang, who is a New York foodie. She doesn't do anything food related for her day job. But it's funny because she is one of the ones where she, like the hipster label, she doesn't want to call herself a foodie, but she does have a food blog and her Instagram is all food and she throws food parties. And, he asked her to track everything that she ate for 1 week, and she spent $350 alone just on food. And I looked at all the photos of everything she ate, and it was an incredible spread.
Yeah.
Which kind of made me, you know, look at my bowl of kale and wonder how I could jazz it up with some quail eggs or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is kind of not intimidating, but God, it's like, how do you have the time? Like,
right.
I don't even have time almost to go to the regular grocery store, let alone the fancy farmer's market, and cook all this stuff.
Well, and while all of this, like, foodie culture is going on and how it has become this new mark of being cultured, especially among, I do think it is something that is very much among our generation. I'll be curious to hear from older listeners, too. But Nina Burley over at LA Times also notes how this food obsession is kind of ironic and really sad, considering the fact that a lot of Americans really can't even afford a decent meal.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about foodie and foodism from the high level when, yeah, it's true, like, the average person is not feeding themselves very well at all.
Yeah,
if they
can't
afford to.
She pointed out that our weird foodie, food porn, Food Network, Top Chef obsession kind of coincided with the economy tanking. And so there's more to think about as far as food goes than just how it looks on a plate on Top Chef.
Yeah. So what do you think, though, Caroline? Like, considering this new foodie culture that has, it's not necessarily, the foodies are not new, obviously, but it's simply more accessible. And for some reason, generationally, it seems like we are a lot more into food than we used to be. But do you think that drawing a parallel between that and saying that food is now, like, the new whatever, the new art, is valid?
Well, I don't know if I would blow it up to that stature. I think that websites like Yelp, to name one, have almost made eating out at fine restaurants or fancy restaurants or just a hole in the wall that no one's ever heard of, it's made it almost a competition.
Right.
To see who can eat the coolest food and write the best review about it and have the most check-ins at a place. So there are a lot of social issues around food.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem to be a young person's pursuit, as opposed to 20, 30 years ago, where maybe it was just stuffy older white city folk who were, like, you know, going to fine dining restaurants and things like that.
Yeah, maybe a lot of it, too, is obviously there's access to food, but also in our personal lives, just it's a byproduct of social media and how we want to overexpose pretty much every part of our lives. It's part of the construct now, the public persona that we are online.
I actually don't post any food photos online. Well, because most of them would be like, here's my Campbell's tomato soup again. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm not really interested in people's food photos, to be honest.
I think I'm just going to start posting, like, really, like, sad food photos. Like, uncooked yam. Like, a yam that you've done nothing with. That's a sad-looking food. So get ready, Caroline.
Look at this half-eaten box of quinoa that you haven't touched in 3 months.
Sad, hashtag sad food. but I do want to open it up to listeners out there, because I'm sure we've done, we did an episode a long time ago on gender differences among chefs. Mm-hmm. And I know we have a lot of cooks and chefs and foodies, whether you want to call yourself a foodie or not, who do listen to the podcast. So I will be curious to hear from folks. Like, do you feel like food culture has become overblown just in general? Has it replaced, in a way, art because it is so accessible?
And do you feel competitive about your eating?
Be honest. we can read your letters anonymously if necessary. And speaking of letters, if you want to write into us, our email address is momstuff@discovery.com. And, of course, you can always start a conversation over on Facebook as well. And we've got a couple of letters to read to close out this episode, part two, on Feast. But before we get to that, we've got a quick word from our sponsor that brought us this episode of Stuff Mom Never Told You.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, here's a letter from Chris on our pregnancy sex episode. Subject line, pregnant ladies equals sexy.
Whoa.
Yeah, I just listened to your podcast on pregnancy sex, and I must agree that pregnant ladies are uber sexy. I always thought they were attractive and had that glow, but it wasn't until my wife and I were thinking about trying for a baby that I realized how attracted to them I am. During the entire 9 months of her pregnancy, I couldn't get enough. However, that bell curve you spoke of did not apply to her at all. Don't get me wrong, there was sexy time, but her appetite was not nearly as voracious as I was led to believe by other sources. This kind of surprised me, seeing as how she had a pretty easy pregnancy, no morning sickness, back pain, etc., until the very end when she had high blood pressure. So, to sum up, Prego equals sexy and bell curves lie. Thanks for the podcast. And thank you, Chris.
Well, I've got one here from Ramiro, and this is in response to our episode on child caregivers. And he writes, I listened to your podcast on child caregivers. Thank you for doing so. I myself was a child caregiver throughout my high school and beginning of college years. Like many families, I came from a single parent home, just my mother and I, and she didn't speak English. My mother was diagnosed with cancer while I was in the 10th grade. I didn't even have a driver's license, but I had to take her to all her chemotherapy appointments and surgeries and interpret for her since there was no one else who could do that. I broke a lot of laws and everything I could to make sure that she got the medical attention she needed, so much so that I would fill out all of her paperwork and knew exactly what medication she was on and what she was allergic to before the doctors would even ask her. I would fill out all the paperwork and even sign for her since her English was very limited. I don't want people to feel sorry for me since I think I'm doing very well for myself, but I'm writing you because at that age I didn't have a voice. That is why I really appreciated your podcast. In my younger years, I was the voice of my mother who was sick, and I don't regret doing it, but to be honest, and maybe it was a cultural thing, I never heard my mother thank me for all that I did for her. I was just expected to take care of her. Now that I'm an adult, I try not to relive those years, but if my mother were alive today, all I would want is the acknowledgement, a recognition, a voice of the sacrifices that I and many other children do, awaiting the inevitable death of your loved one. Before your podcast, I really didn't know the numbers nor any statistics regarding this matter, so thank you for your podcast, which is a great platform to give people like me some recognition that we exist. And that letter just warmed my heart. So thank you, Ramiro, and to Chris, and to everyone who has written into us, momstuff@discovery.com. And if you're listening to this when it is coming out, I hope that everyone is having a wonderful and safe holiday season. Let us know what you're doing during your holidays by hitting us up on Facebook, tweeting us at momstuffpodcast, and you can also follow us if you want to check out what we're up to on Tumblr at stuffmomnevertoldyou.tumblr.com. And if you want to learn a lot about food and the science of food and even recipes as well, you can head over to our website. It's howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.